Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
All right. Here we are. Happy Thursday, everybody.
I'm so excited, Mark. I'm like a kid on Christmas morning.
Are you now?
You know why I'm so excited?
Why is that?
Because I just saw a note that Major League Baseball free agency starts today.
Oh, really?
Oh, I can't wait to see what the Rockies have in store for us.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
You think they're going in hard?
Oh, all kinds of goodies.
Yeah.
Under the baseball tree.
It's only a matter of time before Aaron Judge is here.
Yes. Aaron Judge.
I'm here. I think
I'm here.
Yeah.
Trey Turner.
No, we can't have Trey Turner. He made the cheesy...
You didn't like that?
No, I hated every second of it.
Really?
Come on, man.
Trey Turner, just like for me, he's done.
In case you missed it, Trey Turner put together a little hype video narrated by John Hamm.
Yeah, it was.
In the Progressive commercials.
It was really bad.
Tom Hamm.
Yeah, it was
love
bad.
Flow. I love flow.
You want to change your franchise's future? Oh, here we go.
Maybe you should lend your... voice to some of these guys. You're always looking to add a new business to your entrepreneurial folder.
Mike, I know what I'm decent at, which isn't much, and I know what I'm bad at. And reading cheesy scripts for guys like Trey Turner, I'd be bad at that.
Coming up at 6:45, something you're very good at, What Does the Film Say? New segment.
Ooh.
Where you broke down the film of the...
It should be a song. What does the... What does the film... No, what does the fox...
One right, that's the one. What does the fox say?
What does the film say? That's all I know of that. That's all I know of that song.
That was excellent.
I think that's all the...
Put that in his song reel.
Yeah, I think that's the only lyrics in that song. What does the fox say? What
did you think of Russell Wilson's clapback at Pete Carroll yesterday? Won a lot of games without a wristband.
Yeah. That was, yeah, listen, Pete Carroll's gone out of his way to, to let it be known that Russell Wilson was an issue for him. And Russell's played the high road, you know, pretending that he doesn't hear any of it. But I was actually happy
pretended.
Yeah, pretending that he doesn't hear any of it. Oh, I don't know. I didn't hear what he said. And then he answered the question perfectly.
Like he had a stock answer ready to go?
Yeah, like he had already prepared and rehearsed. Listen, I thought it showed a human element to him, which I think is good. He's a human. You should be pissed. All right, I've had enough. Now, I think, and I heard Brock on with The Drive yesterday.
Brock Huard, yep.
Brock Huard.
Not Brock Osweiler.
No. And I heard Brock talking about the fact that, you know, Pete took a public flogging in Seattle for years and years and years. And he's taken a very long victory lap on, hey, listen, I managed him. I helped him. We won not solely because of him, because we managed him well. And I understand that Pete's tired of, like, He's waving that flag. Like, he is saying, hey, man, I told you so. He's on the, like, he could have his own I told you so island. We might have to just dedicate something to Pete Carroll. That's a good, that would be a
good. You want me to throw that out to the texters?
Yeah, the good texture.
So Pete Carroll gets something on I told you so island. What is
it? Yeah, because he's on this year-long parade, this I told you so parade that he's on, which, as you know, I respect.
Because you're a good loser,
yeah,
but a poor winner.
Oh, I'm a terrible winner. Terrible. And, you know, Pete's got some of that in his DNA. mean, that's what he's showing us. So.
Well, if Pete wants to do that, that's Pete. I'm more interested in Russ. And what I heard and saw from Russ yesterday was a little bit more serious. It wasn't everything is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It was there was a tone to him that I thought was okay. Enough's enough. We gotta get this thing going. I know I don't look good, and maybe you know we always talked about. Come on, dude, read the room.
Right.
Maybe he's read the room. Because I thought he was a lot more real yesterday.
And that's what we've always asked for. But I just thought there was a human element to Russ yesterday, which, like you said, enough's enough. And not that it was vitriolic in any way, shape, or form, but you can tell it's bothering him. And it should. To which I say, good. Now, you know, obviously, you brought a lot of that on yourself. I'm not dismissing what went on in Seattle or the perceptions that went on. We know the perceptions, you know, perceptions become reality over time if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, right? And the way people feel is real. I mean, everybody and their brother's uncles come out on somebody's podcast to bash him. You know, so, you know, I go back to if everywhere you go it smells like crap, it's probably you. You know, that's a good, so maybe there's some self-reflection there. Because if everywhere you go, you just wear people out, then that's a you issue. And I hope that for his sake that, you know, he recognizes that. And I'm sure that he does. But the bottom line is I just appreciated the fact that he wasn't a robot. That he was, there was some, yeah, I think there was some genuine, you know, just emotion and anger and whatever. But it was like for the first time, that's probably the first time we have ever heard him in any way, shape, or form actually be real. Right? He leaves the podium after that debacle that was the Indianapolis game where people were leaving before halftime. Oh, that's right. I mean, stop.
Yeah, for the first time I felt like there wasn't a cyborg inside him.
All right.
The other news of the day yesterday, of the evening, the Nuggets shook off what was maybe their worst quarter of basketball, the second quarter, against the Pacers. They got outscored 43-21, but they dusted themselves off, came back, strong second half, strong fourth quarter, made the plays, and got another road win. 8-3, won 4 in a row.
Yeah.
Big showdown in Boston tomorrow against the Celtics. So
I saw George Karl tweet, our own George Karl here, tweet that Jokic has got a master's or a PhD, and everybody else is just getting a degree. Like that's how advanced he is.
He's playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers.
That's another one.
I like that one better.
You do?
Yeah, just because I think we could all. It's easier. Just say he's playing. We're all playing checkers. He's playing chess.
Is there another saying like that? Like one guy's doing one thing and another guy's doing another thing. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
Like chess and checkers. Is there another
master's degree and undergraduate? I don't know.
That guy's playing Monopoly. The other guy's playing Parcheesi.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh. Love Parcheesi. That was one of my favorite board games as a kid. Parcheesi. Yeah. Sorry. Love Sorry.
That guy's playing Chutes and Ladders. The other guy's just playing Chutes.
That guy's playing Connect Four. This guy's playing Twister. All right, we're off and rolling. What feature of I Told You So Island does Pete Carroll need to be have named after him? The best of Joel Klatt, who talks a little bit about Wristband Gate. It's now become a gate. Wristband Gate. That's next.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
6 a.m. listeners, always thinking of you. We get Joel Klatt on every week during the 8 o'clock hour. 8 a.m. listeners, they don't know how good they have it. So we give you the best of Klatt. We ask Joel if he thinks the Broncos have a 3 or 4 game winning streak in them.
No, not in particular. I don't think that they're good enough on the offensive line to do that. I think to go on a win streak, you've got to be able to dominate up front, and they don't do that. Now they're going to be what, banged up at center now, and then we'll see what happens there. So I remain, you know, pessimistic about the possibility of a win streak. I don't think that I've seen anything from this team that would suggest that they're going to enter into any sort of consistency. And in order to win any stretch of games in a row, you either need an incredibly weak schedule or you need to play with an incredible amount of consistency. And that's something that has eluded these Broncos, in particular on the offensive side. So I think Nathaniel Hackett is hoping for a win streak, but nothing would suggest that they're about to go on it. None of their play. Their defense is going to get a little bit worse now without Bradley Chubb. And that would suggest, like, okay, the offense needs to take a step forward. Well, what have we seen that would tell you that the offense is going to take a step forward? I don't see it. I think that they played the long game with Bradley Chubb. I don't think that they were going to sign him to a long-term deal. It was pretty clear. So at that point, it's like you're either, you know, a one-loss team and very much in the race, and you're going to keep him around, or they were going to deal him and try to get some draft picks, and that's what they did.
Offensive line play isn't sexy to talk about. There are no stats really involved with it. Nothing with fantasy football that involves offensive line play. But yet, when I hear Mark talk about how bad the offensive line play is around the NFL, when I see Tom Brady and Matt Stafford struggling mightily this year compared to last year and the obvious differences in their offensive line, I'm curious, as somebody who calls top college football games every week, what is the state of offensive line play in college? And does it explain why it might be so bad in the pros?
Well, I think what you have is different styles of offense. And I think it's hard for offensive linemen. You know, we used to talk about this with quarterbacks. It's like these college systems. It was hard to translate into the NFL. I think the same can be said for offensive linemen. And the biggest difference, Mike, is the fact that the RPO, the run pass option, is I don't want to say it's way more prevalent in college football, but it's very different in college football. And it's because the rules are different. So the rule in college football is that you can be 3 yards down the field as an ineligible receiver and you're still fine. So that's the buffer, the margin. So in an RPO, you can come off the ball and actually block those run plays. Because of that, what you have is it's very rare for a college offensive lineman to have to just sit in legitimate pass protection. Because they run those RPOs so often, even on third and obvious, they're running some sort of RPO where you're trying to put some defender in conflict. And because of that, the offensive lineman's job becomes a little bit more simplistic. So then they go to the NFL and the buffer is only 1 yard. Okay, so the 1 yard buffer for ineligible downfield is 1 yard. Well, because of that, you can't be as prevalent in your play selection in obvious passing situations with the RPO. Which means that you've got to be in a traditional pass set more often. I don't think that that's what's developed in the college game, the traditional pass set. It's so rare to find a guy that is really good when they've got to throw the football, that he can defend both a power rush and a speed rush. Now, granted, that's rare at the next level as well, but it's just not being developed. And so when these guys get to the next level, what ends up happening is that they're more raw than they ever have been. Even if they're more talented or more physically gifted, right? They're more raw. They don't have the reps necessary to be really good in pass protection. I think that that's a huge issue. There's also the issue in college football of the wide hash marks. When you've got the wide hash marks, what happens is that you have more space. When you have more space, you can exploit the defensive structure. And what you can do is you can basically tell yourself, we are not going to run the football unless we have an advantageous run box. Okay, so unless we can block everybody in the run front, we're going to throw the ball out and try to exploit the space on the outside. In the NFL, it's not as easily defined. So I think that you have to run the football against what I would call the heavy run box more often in the NFL than you do in college football. For all of those reasons, and those are, by the way, you know, some of them personnel related and others just structure of the sport and rule related. I think all of those reasons are why I think that we've seen a deterioration of the offensive line position and why it's so hard for these NFL teams to actually find good offensive linemen.
Hey, you know, I want to ask you because I got in this tete-a-tete, if you will, on Twitter just about the RPO game. And you know far more about it than I do, but I would tell you, like, I always think of RPO is you've got an option to hand it to a running back. You're putting a defensive end or a tackle or whoever in conflict, right? You're making them make a decision. Are you going to surf this? Are you going to pitch down and take it? How are you going to react to that? And then you're also looking at a second level defender. If I can put that guy into conflict, you know, I can throw behind him on a little drift route or whatever the case may be. Or I also almost have this triple option where I can pull it as a quarterback and run, right? So that kind of is RPO, you know, 101, if you will. How do you call it when they don't have a running back in empty? Do you still call it an RPO when the quarterback has an option to run it, but he can throw it as well? Is that, like, do you define that differently? Because I have no idea.
Well, I do, but only in terms of when the decision is made. So for me, there are pre-snap RPOs and there are post-snap RPOs.
Okay,
what you explained initially was a post-snap RPO. You're going to get into a set and you're going to try to put somebody in conflict. And you're going to put them in conflict post-snap. Okay, so you're going to put usually a support player, and by your offensive structure and personnel group, you're going to try to isolate a particular defender and then put the quarterback's eyes on that player. And during the fake, you're going to try to make that defender wrong that's in conflict post-snap. Then there's what you're talking about out of an empty set, which is more of a pre-snap ratio run-pass option. So now the quarterback has to decide before the ball is snapped whether he's going to run it or not. So what you see sometimes in college football is like this empty set where you've got either a 3x2 or even a 4x1. And what you have is usually it markets three plays, not two. In that instance, if it's a pre-snap RPO, there's usually three options, one to the right, one to the left, and the quarterback. So for instance, right, if you're going to get into it and you see it on short yardage, sometimes you see it on 2-point plays a lot. What you see in college football is that you'll put four receivers over to, like, let's say the right side. Well, if there's four defenders over there, then you're like, okay, we're not going to throw it over there. They've got defenders. Now I've got five offensive linemen and me, the quarterback. Well, if they've got six players in front of me, I don't like that, okay? So there's 6-for-6 and 4-for-4. Well, that means there's a one-on-one on the other side. So now I'm going to go exploit that one-on-one, and I'm going to throw that slant. Okay, now let's say they kind of like walk out that linebacker towards the single receiver side because maybe it's Marvin Harrison Jr. or somebody that you're like, man, we just can't allow him to have a one-on-one. Well, now there's only five guys in the what I would call the box. Well, now my five offensive linemen can block those, so I'm just going to give a little quarterback draw. Well, let's say the support player on the right side of the four receiver side, he wants to walk in a little bit, and he wants to be kind of play a halfway. Well, now I've got 3-for-3 on a block, and I can get to the edge with that fourth guy, so I'm just going to pitch that screen out there. So when it comes to an empty set, think of it as a pre-snap decision from the quarterback. He's got three options. It can be any of those, and it's all based on ratio. If you're thinking about a traditional RPO, that's a post-snap where you're putting a particular defender in conflict, generally the support player, based on your structure, and your eyes as a quarterback are going to go to him right away after the snap, and you make him wrong.
There he is, the great Joel Klatt, everybody. Presented by Audi Flatirons, joins us each and every week. And we make sure you 6 a.m. listeners get a chance to hear some of the best. Morning Brew, coming your way. Red flags popping up all over the place when you hear what Draymond Jones has to say about his Broncos' future. That's next.
It's time for your Morning Brew. Grab a cup of Joe and get caught up on everything you need to know. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
You know, it was great just to be able to refresh, watch all the film, watch a lot of stuff, watch a lot of cut-ups on what we've done really well, what we can get better at, and what we need to get rid of. So I'm excited to obviously go on the second half.
He was working. He was working by the pool.
Of course he was.
He was in the pool.
That's what he does.
Working.
That's right. It was like Peyton Manning when he had his helmet on in the hot tub.
Right.
His foot and his ankle. Was it his ankle that was hurt? It was his ankle.
Russ made it a point to say, I've been going to Mexico during bye week since I was a rookie.
Right.
So Russ fired back at Pete Carroll about the wristband. And yes. I jokingly called it wristband gate.
Uh-huh.
I look over to my right. ESPN, right. Get up with Greeny. Need my Greeny in the morning.
You do.
And they were previewing what was coming up, and guess how they previewed Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll?
Yeah, wristband gate.
Wristband gate.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm a genius.
I don't know about that. They put a gate on everything.
It is. Why? Why do we put gates on everything?
I don't know. Do we just want to lock everybody in? We want to gate us up.
Just gate us up.
We're living in
everything's
this,
a gate.
The NFL's a gated community.
Everything's a gate. Next on the Morning Brew.
All I know is this year, for how he's played, I mean, he's been a true pro. He's been great in the meeting room starting from that standpoint. And then you come out here on the field and he's worked every day, hasn't missed much. I think, you know, I give a lot of credit to the defensive staff.
There is Nathaniel Hackett talking about Draymond Jones. Now, we're going to get to more Draymond here in a second. But looking ahead to our new segment, What Does the Film Say?
Mm-hmm.
I gave you a homework assignment that involved the Broncos defense getting ready to gear up to stop Derrick Henry. I want you to use one word,
ooh,
to describe what you see from Draymond Jones on film. One word.
Domination.
Okay. More on that coming up in What Does the Film Say in about 10 minutes. Next on the Morning Brew.
I view my standing with the franchise as this is a Drake going to year four. That's all I can say.
Do you want to stay here? Do you want to be here long term and be a part of this?
I'm here right now.
Oh, whoa.
Where's
that? Where?
That is icy.
Did somebody just open a window? Did an Arctic chill just blow through here?
I'm here right now.
Whoa, Draymond Jones asked about his contract status.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here right now.
I'm here right now.
I'm here with the franchise. That's like a coach calling the quarterback to the player.
Yeah. It's not good.
Where'd that come from?
Obviously not happy.
At what?
I would imagine several things. One, in today's game, you get to the third year and when teams let you get into your fourth year, just sign, if you feel like you've played well, sign a disrespect. And let me tell you what, that dude is balling. That dude can play. I mean, he flat out can dominate. So he's a pretty special player, and you don't have him locked up yet. And if I'm sitting there from his standpoint going, if you're his agent, the market is just going to blow you out of the water. And you already have 5.5 sacks through, what, 8 games? Man, if you stay on that pace, Mike, you stay on that pace, you get 11, 12 sacks. The way you're playing run defense, you will be the number one defensive free agent in football. Like, that's how good you're playing right now. And so there's a sign of disrespect there that, hey, year three, you went after, you know, you locked up Courtland Sutton coming off an ACL who wasn't playing that well. You locked up Tim Patrick, and you just let my mentor, Bradley Chubb, go, and I don't have a contract? Now, I don't know what the status is. I don't know if they've offered him, if they've talked to him.
Doesn't sound like it. Or if they did, negotiations are far apart.
So, yeah, that is a guy that is not pleased at all with what's going on right now. So, anyhow, that can change, and you know, you can get cheery in a heartbeat with a big fat contract, right? Big fat check.
It does, though, speak to what we were talking about the other day after Justin Simmons. I brought up the point about Simmons. Guys talk about getting paid. Guys talk about contracts. And I brought up the point about, hey, at this point, with where we're at right now, do you have guys looking at themselves as independent contractors?
Mm-hmm.
And, wow, what I hear from Draymond Jones right there, he's looking out for himself.
Yeah. Not happy.
And it is about the money right now.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, here's
don't
the
give me this love of the game stuff. This guy is thinking about his next contract.
Well, here's the other thing for him. I mean, you think about where he's at right now. Like, they haven't. He didn't know what it's like to win. He didn't know what, he didn't have that feeling. What it's like to win. He didn't know what it feels like to have, you know, to be in a winning culture right now. And I'm sure he's probably sick of it. And then you just kind of kick him out the door. I can understand it.
Next on the Morning Brew.
Well, I knew I couldn't wait too much longer because then he's been sitting for real time, like 45 minutes. And it's tough to tell a guy that's been sitting for 45 minutes, all right, now come in and win the game for us. It's my fault. I left him in the first half when he had three. He's usually very, very trustworthy. Just getting him in early in that fourth quarter because, you know, he's our guy. And I know that he does a really good job throughout his career of playing with four fouls, five fouls. And thank goodness he was able to do that again tonight. But just a true team win.
Michael Malone having to deftly move his way through the game with Nikola Jokic in foul trouble and did so. The Nuggets shaking off a horrendous second quarter to go on and beat the Indiana Pacers.
Right.
122-119. Good road win for the Nuggets. They've won four in a row. By the way, Malone getting into it with a fan.
I heard this.
Yeah, so he got into it with a fan as Jokic was walking to the bench midway through the second quarter. And as Malone said after the game, he was just a little bit too aggressive in my face. I don't react kindly to that, partner.
Right.
Ooh. And the fan was removed. We are seeing a lot more of this. I mean, I'm all for the good-natured heckling. Okay, you buy a ticket, you can heckle, you can boo, but seems like more and more we have folks who go to games who think that buying a ticket gives them the right to do anything, to say anything,
right?
Do anything. Sorry, folks, it doesn't.
Yeah, if you were allowed as a player to go up in the stands and dispense some frontier justice, there would be a lot less people that it's kind of like Twitter. You know, a lot less people that would be in your face about stuff. But I just like Michael Malone.
Yes, we know that.
Yeah.
That'll do it for the Morning Brew. Bring that to you each and every morning at 6:30. Up next, new segment. What does the film say? Mark has dug deep into the film to give us a game plan readiness for the Broncos when it comes to trying to stop King Henry. That's next.
The eye in the sky don't lie.
I don't like the technique that fat needs to get his feet moving better than that. That just makes me sick and want to throw up. And I promise you, when he came off that field, I ripped his
Time for Stint to use the exclusive game film only the Broncos coaches see to answer the big question. What does the film say?
If I had to go, I'd just go. I'd just pee my pants. I'd be standing in the huddle pen.
Here's Schlereth and Evans to let Broncos country know. What does the film say?
You know, Mark is always during breaks saying, come over here. Take a look at this. And he brings up his Exos Thundercloud, which shows the All-22.
Sure.
The coach's film.
Sure.
He's like, take a look at this. Let me show you this. Look at Russ. This guy's open. He's going to see him. He doesn't see him.
What does the Russ say? No. That was-
so I thought to myself.
What does the film say?
Self.
Yes.
Why should I be the only one to benefit from all this? Why should I be the one to get this kind of rich, broken down analysis of what's going on? So we came up with what does the film say? I gave you a homework assignment at the end of yesterday's show. I know how much you love when I give you homework assignments. Very simple task. Because the Broncos are getting ready to face Derrick Henry this week, I'd like to know, coming off the London game in which Travis Etienne ran very well, put up big yardage against the Broncos, what did you see in the film? And what does that tell you about as the Broncos get ready to face King Henry?
Okay.
What does the film say?
Right. What does the film say? Well, I'm trying to. How many yards? Can you look up how many yards did ETN have?
Oh, I'll get the specific number. I think it was about 150.
Was it? Are you sure? 150?
I didn't realize that need specific numbers.
Well, I mean, you were
going into what does the film say? Yeah. Not what does the stat box say? 24 carries for 156 yards. I told you.
That's a lot of yards.
That's a lot of yards.
Here's what I would tell you, which is, you know, 6.5 yards a carry. And when you look at those numbers, you're like, wow, right? Like, wow, they really got run through. And then you kind of break it down a little bit further, Mike. So I went through every touch that ETN had. And one of the cool things about my system is I can plug in any down and distance. I mean, I can plug in any parameter you want. So you can say, you know, give me all the third down and seven pluses, right? And I plug it in and go bloop, and I've got them all, right? Give me anything you want. So I can look at individual coverages. So I can look at, hey, give me all the cover ones. Hey, give me all the, you know, whatever. I like anything you want to put in there, I can look at. So I just basically put in every touch that ETN had. And I will tell you, I walked away from that knowing that he had put up a lot of yards, right? And looking at those stat lines that you mentioned, they surprised me because I thought the Broncos really defended well.
Interesting. Okay.
Really well.
Because, again, the numbers say no way.
Right. So one thing you have to understand about the Broncos is they're going to play, for the most part, with light boxes. They're not going to be putting you in a situation where, you know, they're rolling a safety down early and letting you know that they're playing some type of post-high safety, right? They're not going to do that. They're going to play that shell look, and they're primarily going to stay in there, and they're going to ask their corners to read what's going on the end with the tight ends and the tackles, and then run fill. And let me just tell you, K'Wan Williams can do that, obviously. I mean, you look at anybody. Justin Simmons is great at that stuff.
Kareem Jackson's
phenomenal. So they're all good at it. I will tell you, they had one 50-plus yard run off of basically a counter. It depends on what team you're talking about. Like the Minnesota Vikings called their scissors play. And so off of what you are, what your staple is, you know, the mid zone stuff that they run a lot of mid zone stuff. And it's amazing because they had like one or two times they ran this counter off the mid zone. So they're in shotgun, right? And they're running that zone read mid zone, you know, 14-15 handoff basically, right? And so they're running a bunch of that stuff. And we are whipping their asses up front. And they're a big physical team. You talk about DJ Jones and Draymond Jones, and they are physically. I'm watching DJ Jones, and he's stabbing two dudes. One guy's got with his right hand right in the middle of the chest. The other guy's got with his left hand in the middle of the chest. And it's almost like a cartoon where he's going to knock their heads together, right? And they both fall down, and then he makes a tackle. I mean, he's just, boom! So linebackers are free flow and everything else, and it's pretty incredible.
DJ Jones was a stud free agent pickup, wasn't he?
Oh, my gosh. And second wave free agent pickup. Just dominating. And then the same thing, I mean, they're defending the run, and they're defending it with lighter boxes. They're not committing people down there, and they're getting down there late. So there was the counterplay. So the back is on the left-hand side of the quarterback in shotgun. Right. And he takes this counter step in like they've been running, and they let guys flow, and then they circle him, and then he takes off out the backside. And that's the one he got about 55 yards. I don't know exactly how long the run was. So of that 156 yards on 24 carries, over 50 of it came on one play. And it was probably for the Broncos an unscouted look. Meaning it was something they put in specifically to balance or counter off of what they run the majority of plays off of. And they ran that play twice. The second time, the Broncos stuffed it for about a two-yard gain. A
couple of quick takeaways as I'm listening to you. Awesome breakdown. What does the film say? Draymond Jones, in the wake of what we just heard from Draymond Jones saying, you know, I'm here right now.
Right.
Is this guy a must sign?
Yeah.
Resign? Sooner rather than later?
Without question.
Okay.
And here's the deal. You know, have you gotten to the point now where he's just looking at it like, why would I sign a contract now? I'm going to be one of, if not the number one free agent acquisition player defensively in football. And then just really, really quick, like, They got two or three other like 12-yard plays. One where they ran just an outside play off of a orbit motion that was a really good fake by the quarterback and by the receiver. And I mean, you had Singleton going the wrong way. And anyhow, long story short, they had like two or three 12-yard runs. The rest of the runs were 0, 1, 2, 2, 1, 2. So they had a couple of breakouts, one on a wham play. They got big yardage. And ETN, let me just tell you, he runs hard. He runs over people. That's going to be something, broken tackles and those type of things.
Well, this is going to be my last question.
Yeah.
After looking at the film, where's your level of confidence in being able to contain Derrick Henry?
Listen, Derek, I think of it this way. Derrick Henry by himself is not going to beat you. I think they play run defense, and that was the thing that blew me away. They're really good, you know, really good flow. There's a couple of plays that broke out a little bit for 8-10 yards where Josie Jewell, you know, jumps in the wrong gap, tries to you know outmaneuver a dude and gets caught in there. Really good backs, but I look at the way they play up front. They'll give up some yards because there will be a couple of broken tackles and there will be some guys out of position here and there because that's football. But the way they're playing right now, I have a lot of faith in the Broncos defense.
Awesome. All right. That's what the film says. Coming up, Four Down Territory next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.